Octavarius descended from planet X, ready to save our planet from Mars.
He'll make you laugh. He'll make you cry. But most importantly, he's gonna save you.
Figure out when.
Let him speak for himself. He's got a lot to say.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. Gotcha.
Wait, Mark's not even in the room.
Mark will get here.
I'm here.
He's making an apple whisper.
Yes, it's a cocktail that only I invented just several days ago.
As opposed to, like, a panel of experts and Brian?
Well, I'm just saying that, of course, I'm the first person ever to have this thought, and I want to take credit for it because nobody else thought of it. No, it's not apple and whiskey, but, that's what Mark's today. Doing. Mark's doing a new drink.
I'm going rogue. I call it the apple yell.
How
Mark's
much
gone rogue?
Mark, how much lemon pepper seasoning is in it?
Oh my gosh! Why is everything he cooks with lemon pepper?
Mark loves lemon pepper.
He loves
Mark.
Lemon pepper.
I could not believe.
Yet,
Mark
we'll
thinks
it.
Mark thinks that adding lemon pepper makes everything better.
He did that last night.
The recipe just says lemon pepper to taste, so it's whatever you want.
Welcome to the Octavarius Podcast. This is episode 118 of the podcast. Once we get past the teens, we'll get to rhyme with something other than teen. So for now, we're still feeling mean.
Feeling mean!
And without any further ado, Mark is on the furthest end of the room for a change. So why don't we start on that end of the room and sound off!
That's new.
I'm Mark.
LP.
Nick.
Costelvi.
Adam.
Brian.
Cloud.
Tins.
Keith.
Scott.
Lauren.
Who the fuck was that?
Yeah, we did have a...
Oh, Costelvi?
That is our special guest this week. Brilliant filmmaker and English professor.
Yeah.
Adam Dick.
That good ride, boy.
Welcome.
Hey, every Octavarius fan person thingy.
Adam,
web,
you...
internet.
You made the documentary, the critically acclaimed and... it's made the festival tour documentary A Better Life. And then you also are currently working on the film Nightlights.
Yeah, working on Nightlights, A Better Life is out on BigStar.tv. And .tv is like .com, except for it's TV. BigStar.tv.
Okay.
Yeah, you get it? Isn't that awesome?
So it's just like you said.
Just like I said it, kind of. But I'm still not used to the whole, like, other things other than CommonNet and org. I'm not used to that world
What
yet.
Not everybody may know about Adam is that in the film Nightlights, it includes the star, the starlet, whose actual name escapes me right now, but she portrayed the Icebox in Little Giants.
Oh,
yeah.
I love her.
Becky Icebox O'Shea from Little
Fun
Giants.
Fact.
Her real name is Shauna Waldron, and she's in the movie, not being so Icebox-y, although she did tackle me once behind the scenes in that. She can really freaking tackle. It kind
of
hurt.
The writer of Little Giants is an alumni of my high school.
And Rick Moranis is awesome.
Yes.
Very true.
So is Ed O'Neill. I love Ed O'Neill.
And so is Devin Sawa.
And the annexation of Puerto Rico was actually used in a real football game.
Carolina Panthers.
Carolina Panthers used it last football season.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and so was... Oh, shit.
Oh, no. What, Tins?
Oh, boy. You guys are going to kill me.
I better not.
I forgot the mailbag.
Oh, let's go home.
I'm sorry.
We are home.
Let's stay there.
Where?
We're at Key
7.
No.
Oh, wait, Mark. Please.
Oh yeah, I have the mailbag. Don't worry, you guys.
Ooh, look at that. I've never seen the mailbag. It's big. It's impressive.
Yeah, well, that's what it looks
it's
like.
That big?
That could be a real
name. My knees are shaking.
He's going to read it in a way that couldn't possibly work.
This letter comes to us from Mr. Book Author.
Wow.
Book.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
And Mr. Author writes, "Dear Octavarius, I know you guys talk a lot about movies, TV, kindergarten, snacks, but do you ever take some time to read books? You know, books used to be a really big thing. In fact, for a lot of people, they were very formative. But now, every once in a while, I'll go on Facebook and forget all about books. In fact, one time I looked up The Hunger Games, And then the movie had like 8 million fans, and the book had like a couple hundred thousand. And I thought that was kind of sad, because, you know, the book came first and has more stuff to it. Are books going away?
Mr. Althor, no, books aren't going away. But
please,
I,
Book.
But one thing Book. You brought up that was very interesting to me
Thank
is
you for writing.
What is your most formative book? Not your favorite book, but has been the most formative? Is that what you read, Mark?
No,
formative, formative to your character?
Shaped you?
Yeah, what book possibly shaped you the most? So, like, it may not be your favorite book, but it's the book that, like, influenced you the most.
Choke.
Choke?
Choke
no.
is good.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, high school years or, like...
I don't know. You, maybe...
Whatever shaped you. What Dan Brown novel
did you read
shaped
a book
you,
and did it change... Have you ever read a book and it changed your whole, like... You, like, changed your life?
I really haven't, to be honest with you. Not
what,
changed my life.
I've had a couple of different books that made me, you know, change the way I looked at things a couple of times. And the first one that comes to mind is one that I talk about a lot outside of the podcast. Is I very much like the book How to Be a Gentleman. It's very simple, and it can be read by anybody at any reading level. And you think that all that stuff is, you know, very difficult or highfalutin and whatever, but it puts it in very plain language, and it combines the stuff from Miss Manners, that book from the turn of the century, of the old turn of, not the original turn of the century, but I guess from the 1800s to the 1900s, from the 19th century to the 20th century.
Old school century.
Yeah, by Emily Post. It takes Emily Post and it makes it in modern plain language, and it helped me think about actually behaving like a human being, you know?
He does know how to be like a gentleman. It's true.
Thanks. You would hope so if he's writing that book.
I hate books. I hate books are dumb.
Yeah. Dude, books are great.
Reading is for nerds.
You just gotta find the right one.
No, you know, I've enjoyed books, yeah. But I'm past it.
No more books for Keith?
No, I haven't read a book in years and years, and the only ones I have read have been like information books, so like novels, I've not a chance. I haven't read a novel probably since I read the 7th Harry Potter book, which was right when it came out, because I had read all the other ones, so I had to commit and finish the series. But I don't read books.
What about improv books?
Yeah, that's the last other book. That's the only other kind of books I've read.
Would
are
you ever
improv
be interested
books
in like autobiographies or biographies of comedians, since it's like, oh, that's what I'm gonna do?
No, I get so bored reading the words on the page that I'll often start thinking about anything else I could possibly be doing other than sitting here reading this book.
I can't keep my brain focused
in the book before I can think of, man, we are running low on eggs. And this book is not going to help me get those eggs.
What about audiobooks? Is that same or different?
Well, an audiobook...
You can't get them as easily as...
The only reason I would have an audiobook is to pass time that I otherwise couldn't spend doing something else. So I listen to an audiobook when I'm driving, and I can't be entertained in it, like, alone. So there's no other entertainment available is when I use an audiobook.
I really do feel like in this age with so many means to entertain oneself, I feel like people who read books a lot more are those who tend to I feel like a lot of it is really dependent on one's job. Like, I know most of the people I know that read a lot, myself included, are those that have downtime at work that have that ability to read sometimes on the clock. Because normally, you know, I love reading. I try and read a book
You're a big reader, Tim.
I am a big reader.
I would say of my friends, you're possibly the largest reader.
Yeah, I'd say that.
I love you, Tim.
Thanks, man.
You make my job possible.
Well, I try to read a book every week or two if I can.
If I'm
not reading books, I'm always reading shit online, which is a whole other thing entirely. I subscribe to 3 different magazines. I'm like always reading shit.
Do you have that much time at work? You can just like have hours reading though, like
not hours necessarily, but
you're
know,
probably a faster reader than most.
I would say I am probably a faster reader because it might just be a practice thing. I've been doing it for so long and so frequently.
I read how I speak, so it goes at my pace because yeah. I just narrate it in my head.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're a very gentlemanly reader.
And it's,
I just read like it's been narrated by Brian Wall.
It's the same thing with audiobooks too. Like I would agree with Keith. I would normally never listen to an audiobook really unless I'm in a car for 12 hours. But I used to, for about a year actually, I subscribed to Audible. I'd get one audiobook, preferably a nice lengthy audiobook between like 15 and 25 hours every month, and I'd just be able to knock that out at work while I'm at my desk.
Do you feel snobbery by the fact that you read and other people would rather listen to an audiobook?
You know what, Castelvi? Yes, a little bit. But I do it too. So, I mean, when I read one of my biggest reading endeavors, which I sort of regret in the past couple of years, was at the behest of Mark Musinski, who convinced me to read the entire Wheel of Time series.
I haven't finished, and
I can't say this is all your fault, Mark,
because
Mark did was tell me that this series is good. It's a fantasy series, not terribly unlike, say, Lord of the Rings. It has a similarly fantastical quality about it, but the scope of it and the number of characters involved and the side stories that they take are so grand and so many that rather than Lord of the Rings 3 books, the Wheel of Time is currently on its 13th book. And over the course of 3 months, I read them all.
I have the page numbers for all these books, too.
They're huge, Castelvi.
It's 782, 681, 674, 1000, 963, 987, 855.
Sounds like SAT scores.
Now,
you never wanted to quit, like, midway through.
This is my problem. If I start one, you know, I don't ever think I've started a book series and not been able to continue on. I think everything I've read has been just interesting enough where I'll check the second one out. And by the time I'm in the second book of the series, I'm like, forget about it. I have to read them all. I got to find out what happens. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it got to the point where, like, 13 books, it was clearly going to take me half a year if I just read just the print versions. And I really didn't want to spend an entire half a year reading nothing but a fantasy series where I couldn't actually get any real world knowledge out of it. So a lot of times I would get the Audible versions of it, and it ended up being like
one of these books is 40 hours long.
Yeah, not if you get so frustrated with it that while listening to it on audiobook on your iPod, you hit the times 2 speed button, so you have the author reading the book at twice their normal speed, just jabbering away, and you're sort of mostly getting all that information in.
Is it good? Is it, what, I mean,
it's okay.
The Wheel of Time.
Where you're like,
and then he went over to his mother and said, "Hey, mother,
it's okay.
Breakfast?
I mean,
breakfast.
I think
breakfast.
It's meant to be enjoyed. Like, I want to get joy or like something positive. I wouldn't read just to be like, oh, I have to get through it.
And I think, well, it's sort of like you know, when you're watching a movie, even if you're halfway through a movie, if you're at least partially invested in it, even if you know it's not the best movie in the world,
proposal.
You don't want to necessarily, except the proposal, I could turn off.
You know,
I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, I turn it off.
What's your okay? Well, say when you're watching a movie, how much do you watch a movie before you say you might as well watch the rest of it? Like percentage wise, would you say?
I don't, because what I do is I read the reviews.
You get caught sometime where like it's great in the beginning and then you just goes to shit, but now you want to see how it pans out.
I give a movie about
maybe like six, it depends on the movie, but around 60% maybe.
Yeah.
How long it is. I'll pause it and check the running time.
Well, you give a movie about 6 minutes, and then
three minutes.
3 minutes, I think, is a fair assumption. Wow. But then after that 3 minutes, I double it. I go to 6. If I'm still interested, I'll go double. I'll go 12 more minutes.
Okay.
And so and then I guess once I'm
so you're just constantly timing yourself.
Just constantly. I mean, if it's engaging, if I get halfway, I'm like, well, I'm already here. Might as well go all the way.
Castelvi, are you the one that said that you've never seen Godfather because it's too long?
I hadn't seen it all the way through. I had seen enough pieces to say I've seen the entire
thing. See, that's my disagreement with you, Castelvi, is you
what?
Say...
I did see it.
You've never seen the full thing of Die Hard, yet you say you've seen it. You,
I, That's true. I do say that. But
there's another movie.
I've not seen it all the way. You did fall. I haven't seen it all the way. Movie straight.
I haven't seen Godfather all the way through either. You know why? Because I don't care. Because there's a lot of things I have seen.
I like Godfather. So, you know, I just don't think it's so great that you have to watch.
You know, it's mostly that you know, I can't watch everything. So something, I don't, maybe I'll see it someday.
But I'd argue you can't watch everything, but everyone owes it to themselves to see watch. Like the big top classics. 10 reviewed movies of all time.
Yeah. I don't owe it to anybody. America.
You think you owe it to yourself?
Yeah, I'm not going
to
read the top 10 books. God forbid, I'll never even look at them. I don't even. I could care less. So
there are some books that, like, I want to be able to say that I read, but I just can't. I don't think I'm going to get through them.
Do you guys think less of somebody if they haven't read books? Like, I came from a family that wasn't book readers. They were doers and makers. There were people that liked to work with their hands. Uh-huh. They didn't like to sit and read. They feel that books are for kind of lazy people. No, they never said nerds, but they felt that it was for lazy people that just didn't get up and do things.
I think it's just different perspectives. I don't think anyone's dumber.
Well, they never. Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to label every reader a lazy person, but
no. I get.
Reading is so much more active now than most other forms of entertainment, like, you know, TV and radio. Just passively sit and like ingest it, but reading is just like. Put effort into imagining things and stuff, right, Tunes?
Yeah, no, I get you. I mean, just I get you.
Right, guys, right?
Anybody? The one other reader in the room?
The thing I've put my life into is not
like,
dead.
He's not the only other one. He's probably just the biggest.
Well, no, you've got a good point, because it does require a ton of effort, if for nothing else than the fact that you have to, like, physically move your eyes all across the page and absorb that information constantly. It's like the one... entertainment activity that you can't really do anything else during.
Dude, and I get really, really emotional and, like, into it. Hold on here. Intense, like, seriously, when I was, granted, everybody knows I'm a huge fan of Harry Potter.
What?
Huh?
Harry who?
But, like, when I read that last book, spoiler alert, if you haven't read it.
Oh, my, don't.
You're an idiot if you haven't read it yet and don't know how
yeah,
it is.
Or
seen the movie.
Like, when Ron left.
What?
And I, like, literally, like, put down the book and was so angry. Like, utterly so pissed off at J.K. Rowling.
How
and, like,
dare she
write
her story?
You're like the movie
but
misery.
I mean, like, I was so involved because it takes so much longer to read a book series. And you're, like, years upon years. Like, that was an era of my life. Like, that was 10 years that I, like,
that
from
you're not
like,
going to get back.
Yeah, you know, that I invested in this story and it didn't end. Like, no movie is going to last 10 years. Even the the Harry Potter series. But, you know what I mean? Besides
sure.
that, like,
I do. Not really.
And even then, the books span a longer time.
The world is gesturing to Mikula right now. Mikula, what do you have to say?
Lauren, I feel the same way. If you guys, for those nerds out there that can back me up on this one, when in one of the Star Wars books, when they shot Chewbacca and killed Chewbacca,
I know
really?
Exactly that book.
Yeah, and he was dead.
He was dead, and I was like, "You can't do." Well, this,
he didn't
this
get
is right
shot.
Different.
He was saving a planet.
Yeah,
from
but he died. You can't,
son of a bitch.
But listen to me though. Like, I feel like books that are written off that take characters like off like a star like a movie like Star Wars. Like, okay, you can do all like the 20 million Star Wars books. You can't kill. I feel like you can't
so
kill
So you feel
Chewbacca.
Like that's
you know
like
the
violating
that
the that's like violating the creative license.
Nick, I do.
Nick,
yeah.
I think they totally should have killed Chewbacca and I thought it was right, but I was upset as a kid.
And,
yeah.
And
it was
son,
the
and
it was
son
the
and
son of
took over the life debt.
So it's all good.
Lobo. Yeah.
Do you know the name
so,
of that? Lobaka is his nephew, not his son.
Yeah, Lobaka is his nephew.
Oh,
is yes.
Not
yeah.
Dark Saber.
It's in Vector
oh,
Prime.
That's a shitty book.
It's when the is when the I stopped reading the books.
Wait, Chewie's son is named what?
His nephew is named Lobaka.
Okay.
Wait, who's in Vector Prime?
Vector Prime is the start of the new Jedi Order. Which is if you're not familiar, the Star Wars books go on after Jedi in this
large series.
They're
not official canon, but they're official Star Wars merchandise.
Yes. So, like, they're included in the encyclopedia for Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I included it as
so part it's not like the books don't contradict. Do the books, like, ever contradict each other's stories?
Never.
No, they
go through a very diligent process to make sure that doesn't happen.
Because there's a ton of them at this point, right?
Yeah. They made a really good way of never talking about, going into detail about Anakin Scott, because the prequels were not released when, like,
so they never touched that stuff. So it was all Han and Leia's children and going from there.
So stuff like, yeah, all right, you can touch the stuff in the future.
Yeah.
There were some past things.
Like a thousand years earlier.
Timothy Zahn's books. Really,
but yeah.
The thing about it is that it gets into like a legal nest, like of just, I don't know, probably snakes. Whatever terrible legal mess.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Snakes make nests. Go on, Mark.
Well, but what's nice so interesting about it is, like, you can't even... Because when I was a kid, I was like, I'm going to write a Star Wars novel. How hard could it be? But
so how did it go?
Great. Never published. Not yet. Like, the thing is that because there's so much money in that intellectual property, they control it really tightly. To the point where, like, you can't... They won't even read a description of a plot that you send them because they might be doing something similar and then you can sue them. So, like, if you send them... If you're like, I wrote the fucking Shakespeare of Star Wars novels and you mail it to them, they will burn it. Or they'll send it right back to you unopened is actually what they'll do.
Really?
Because they can't legally open it.
Yeah.
And then, not only that, but when you do write a Star Wars novel... It goes through a several person process with Lucasfilm where they approve like every plot point, every thing that happens to a character. So like when Chewbacca died, that was like an agonizing approval process, and somebody in the end had to be like, "Yeah,
kill him."
Yeah, it appeared in Star Wars Insider magazine too. Mm. Like because I was a subscriber at the time.
That was a great magazine.
It was a great magazine.
I mean, I'm not knocking it because I'm sure I would love it, but Star Wars Insider.
I subscribed to Star Wars Insider for like 4 years.
So did I. I still have all the issues in my basement at my parents' house.
Oh, I had to get rid of mine.
You gotta wonder which of those issues gets sent out to Lucas, like the Chewbacca dying one. Like, they're like, okay, we gotta get George in on this one.
Dude, you gotta know that he knows.
Yeah.
It got crazy, and I wasn't even that big of a book dude, but I would get it because my friends would be like, dude, these books.
Are they worth it, reading?
Some of them.
Darksaber
dude,
is.
I'm fucking reading this about Chewbacca. Apparently, so Invector Prime, at the first of its publication, it was extremely controversial because of the death of Chewbacca. Apparently the editor had sent a list of characters to George Lucas that they wanted to kill with Luke Skywalker at the top of the list. The response was what characters they could not kill, and Chewbacca was not on that list.
Wow.
So they killed him. That's pretty much
That's fascinating
really
process.
George saved Luke.
Yeah, he saved
Luke. Yeah, he did.
Because the thing is, like, he probably wants to make money off that.
Dude, he's rich, man. He's got everything.
He's not. He could be richer.
I guess. Whatever.
Can't have everything, Stelvi.
God,
I guarantee he has more than
I want to make so many Star Wars stories. It's sick.
What's weird about this, though, and this actually kind of cuts to the heart of what actually... Because, like, in this world, you're like, why would you ever read a book? TV, we got movies,
knowledge
there's so
power.
Much more fun.
We do got
But, like,
things.
There are books that aren't about knowledge, you know? Or there are movies that are very much about knowledge. But I think what's interesting about a book that makes it still unique is it takes, like, a ton of people to make, a narrative movie. But really, a book, for the most part, is, like, one person.
Yeah, that's true. You know, an editor, a couple other people to make sure it goes smoothly and gets the people in the best shape possible.
But an author could turn in for their first draft like 80-90% of what that final book will be. And it's so interesting that like that is, and in George Lucas's case, you know, it wasn't necessarily a book, but he wrote the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of an interesting thing about writing in that now, like, all George Lucas initially made was like this piece of intellectual property. And now, like, all these other authors have to, like, beg him to kill off a character, and he approves, you know what I mean? It's just one guy.
Do you want to know who they've killed recently?
Yeah.
Who?
Leia's dead now.
What? When? How? Wow. Describe. More information pronto, if not sooner.
Was she eaten?
No.
Because sometimes characters...
She's a Jedi in the
Star Wars
future.
Universe, things get eaten.
Did,
she's
a straight-up Jedi.
Pretty good question,
Did she die happy?
Oh, no.
I say she saved her kids.
Well, what happened was... Okay, God, so something happened. Han Solo's son, Jason, became the dark... The Sith Lord.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
He was part of the reason why Chewbacca died, wasn't he?
They were saving him.
Jason.
Yeah. That sucks.
Chewbacca saved him.
He decided in order to, because all he cared about was the Force. And so in order to truly understand the Force, he needed to understand that there was a dark side. So he learned all about the Sith way.
Big mistake.
The huge mistake, and became a Sith Lord himself, trained an apprentice, and the apprentice killed Leia.
Ugh.
How old was Leia when this happened?
It's probably how old she is now.
She's gotta be like 60.
This paper's about like 40 years older than.
That would be a cool movie.
Who's eaten Star Wars? It was
Boba Fett.
Boba Fett.
That Gamorrean.
Exactly.
Gamorrean
guard.
One more important character.
Tauntaun.
There's gotta be some stuff in that like giant monster fight in Episode 2, right?
Of people that were eaten. No.
You don't think anyone was eaten by a beast?
The person who goes in there first and don't they get eaten?
And what?
And where?
In Return.
It was a Gamorrean guard and...
In Jedi...
And a bunch of other guards.
You also have Riyis, T-Bok.
Oh, the girl.
Ula, yeah.
The girl
guard.
The dancer girl. Right.
Yep.
She got eaten.
The Sarlacc.
Oh, yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
Yes.
T-Bok, Klaatu. Lucat,
listen. As much as I want to talk about all things Star Wars,
no, the audience is digging this.
I think it's time we talk about our guest and his biggest fear.
In
our section of the podcast, when we always have a special guest, called our special guest's biggest fear.
Why did I miss every?
How you doing,
guest?
Adam? What's going on,
man? How you doing? I'm doing pretty good.
So yeah. So Adam, what's your biggest fear? I mean, that you want to admit on this podcast. This is a hard hitting podcast.
The last half hour, this question was up there. I'll tell you what
scares you.
For the first 25 years of my life, I did not have any of these. You're out in public, and all of a sudden you realize you don't have any pants on type dreams.
Okay,
and I just started having them like in a tsunami wave.
When was this?
This was like right around the time like when I started teaching or something. Like you know, there's some Freud would have fun.
So you're an adult.
I'm an adult. Yeah. Okay. So most of my entire like teenage life, all made it through without any of those dreams. And I started having those dreams. Like crazy amounts of them for like a little while, and then I realized that would be pretty freaking terrifying because the first thought that always comes into my head when that happens is like,
so wait, in the dreams, do you have boxers on or are you you're naked, you're just dick swinging?
It varies. Sometimes it's with like briefs, and I don't even wear briefs, and then it's like with boxers, and then like nothing else.
Are you ever wearing a necklace?
You know, I get so distracted.
He's not one to wear necklaces.
I don't even notice.
I know that's why it would be significant if he was wearing a necklace.
It would be. I got to find a mirror next time.
Do you know how good you look when you wear a necklace in your underwear? But, I'm sorry. Go on.
I think that's the first time I've heard that. It's too long. Thank you. But now the funny thing about them is like the first thought that comes to your head when you realize that you're not wearing any pants or something is like, how could I have made it through this entire day without noticing this earlier?
Like I don't think
first
I, yeah, I don't
that
think
goes in your head. Like, it's not like, how do I cover myself up? It's just like, what an idiot I am. How could I have not noticed that I've gone through? You do a ton of stuff in the dream. Like, you go through your entire day. It's like a normal dream.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, like, boom. Oh, I'm not wearing any pants.
So I'm an idiot.
Tins, you want to take a guess what website I'm on right now?
Are you on dreammoods.com?
Dreammoods.com! Our favorite Octavarius is favorite
so much cheaper
Lord
than therapy.
Lord Ivany recommends.
We are so much better. I am learning so much about what naked means in your dreams.
What does Adam's biggest fear mean?
It means one of many things. As with dreammoods.com, it's not really quite clear. One of them that I am seeing is finding yourself naked at work or in a classroom suggests that you are unprepared for a project at work or school.
Makes so much sense.
You may be unprepared in making a well-informed decision with all eyes on you. Your fear that some flaw will be brought to public attention. Also, often when you realize that you are naked in a dream, no one else seems to notice. Is that true?
I feel like they kind of notice but pretend not to for a while just to see how ridiculous it gets. And like someone like nudges me is like, oh, by the way.
Then that means like, it implies that your fears are unfounded. Sweet. No one will notice except no one will notice except you. That's what it says. No one,
Adam, real quick. Yes. I had a thought, and Laura Shaw from the chat room has a thought, the same thought. Now, I'm not going to phrase it the way she said you're hiding the real fear you have. But do you have anything like that's physical, like a physical fear? Like our last guest had a fear of birds, and like I'm terrified of spiders. Like Nick, right? Yeah.
Okay, first, just the idea that my dream is hiding the real fear, that is some Inception meta shit. Right? First of all, that's pretty awesome. We are hard hidden. In my subconscious. My subconscious is hiding something from my
subconscious. Everyone who comes in on this podcast leaves incredibly knowing about themselves.
I am mind-fucked to the extreme. This is great.
Kick.
otherwise, physically, no. Other than like some... No, nothing.
Fearless.
I mean,
no, like, you're not afraid of, like, fire or, like,
well,
dark
ghosts. Or, like an arrow go, like, right in your mouth.
That would be awesome.
Afraid of, like, are you afraid of, like, really tall people?
Real tall people do freak me out because it's so unnatural.
Like, George Murison or, like,
George Murison,
Great Khali? Like,
sure. I mean, they're like, you know, like,
would you be afraid
they're, like, aristocracy for really tall people. Like, they're, like, the achieved tall people.
You'd be afraid of the Big Show?
The Big Show, I think that's kind of the point. But yeah, I mean, no. What? When I meet people way taller than me, like I'm 6'3", so I'm like at the precipice of freak. Yeah. You know
what?
I'm there with you, man.
Like,
this is a great.
And so when I meet people way taller than me, it is kind of a weird experience because they're one out of like 1,000, one out of 10,000.
We're in 2012. We're not in like 1910.
Well, maybe some of us like to prefer to think otherwise, but because I'm taller. But no, tall women, kind of like women that are way taller than me.
Taller than you? How often do you experience someone over 6'1"?
Once or twice a year, honestly. Once or twice a year, I see a woman that's taller than me, and that is an unusual experience.
Love it.
But I'm not phobic of them.
Adam, is there a formative book for you?
A formative
book. I assume you read frequently.
Yeah,
as an English teacher,
voluntarily and by force. The book I thought of because I've been thinking about this all whatever a podcast is. There's this book called The Monster's Ring by Bruce Colville. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this book. It's like a little elementary school like kind of fantasy book about a kid who finds this ring and he twists it once and he turns into like a wolf man and goes around and like terrorizes people as a wolf man. He twists it twice and becomes something else. He twists it three times and becomes like this like massive creature. And it's just kind of about like him like venturing out with like this newfound like ego because he was kind of like a runty kid, and it was just like I love the fantasy of it, and, like all and like he wrote the My Teacher is an Alien books. I don't know.
I've read that one.
He wrote that series, and those books, those fantasy books, really got me. There was one called Jeremy Thatcher Dragon Hatcher, which is kind of like the metrosexual version of like his other books. I don't know. There's something about it, like just the title and the picture is like really flowery and purple and pink, kind of as a different thing. But those books really just got me like into reading. Like, they were like my Harry Potters, but, like, no one knows about them, really.
Yeah.
You know, and so that just got me, like, I became a voracious reader from there. And I think, like, my ability to even talk and walk came from the ability to do that. So I like books.
Hate tall people.
I hate really freaking tall people. And also, like, they're the only... I feel like they know something about me that, like, 99.9% of the population...
It's true, man. Do you know what it looks like?
What are you hiding up there?
Do you voraciously hate those tall
people? Dude, I'm going to show you some pictures of tall women.
Oh, God.
No!
We found it.
Yes. Do you feel that lately there has been much more of a youth-focused... group that reads like the Twilight books and the Harry Potters and the Hunger Games?
Look at this giant.
You're asking him smart questions and he's gonna look at the
giant.
Look at the giant woman.
Let me see her.
She's huge.
She's too big.
I'm gonna turn up by that tonight and I won't be wearing any pants either.
Dude, you fucking big. She's pretty cute for a giant.
She's so big.
She's at least 7 feet tall.
Until she talks and she sounds like the Persian king from fucking.
Dude, that's not real.
Nice.
That's not
that
real.
Is real. I've seen that picture.
Too big. That
dude,
one's too big.
Oh, great. I got a gallery of tall people.
The Twilight stuff. Perfect. And all that stuff. Oh, my God.
But
that
I mean,
woman
doesn't
is,
it look
this one's ridiculous.
Really it gets younger kids to read a little
no,
bit
No, this
more
is real, dude.
The worry I have is that they don't go anywhere beyond that, though. Like, they read that stuff, and then they just go see the movies, and they go right back into MTV. And, like, they don't, like, it doesn't seem to start a trend. Because if a book isn't then about vampires and fairies and whatnot, then it's just not going to get read.
What about Hunger Games? That's not necessarily science fiction.
What about the other book I like?
No, it's pretty sci-fi.
But it's a little bit more reality-based. There's no vampires.
This is the world's tallest
model.
Make it
not
but
sci-fi.
I've seen that picture.
No,
I've seen
that picture before. But what sci-fi effect is post-apocalyptic?
No, this is the one that's...
The fact that they can make fire and
Hunger Games gives me a little
bit,
but it's still high concept. It's still like future...
like huge grid and all that shit.
But isn't that like just... Because they're supposed to be in the future? Like,
well yeah, but like, no kid is going to read like works of literature, quote-unquote, anymore. I know that's kind of a snobby thing, but like, there's not going to be stories about just... There's not going to be any books about like being alive that like people read anymore, I think, like in 20 years. It's all going to be like very genre and high concept stuff, which is good.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see.
I'm sure there's so many people. There's always a subcategory for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the margins seem, the proportions seem to get more and more.
Yeah, I can accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's hard. It's a lot harder to publish just a really good book.
Self-publishing is becoming big now. Like, for real big. Yeah. Like, because of the internet. Now,
well,
it is.
You know, the economics of it are very much in your favor, especially if you can grow your own audience, because the way that publishing as a business is set up is terrible for right now.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just about the market is so constrained, too, for those folks, too. I mean, it's a chicken and the egg kind of all cluster situation where just, like, everything sucks for everything else, which makes it suck more for, like, the literary world. So now it's like Harry Potter, Twilight, and then you better be writing a movie or a TV show kind of thing.
One thing I think that books have wrong is that they don't always take advantage of their medium. I really enjoy books that can only be books. Mm-hmm. Like Bridget Jones' Diary. I know it made a successful film, but like it's set up like it's a diary. Mm-hmm. So like you're reading it because it must be a book. It's a diary.
But they don't even... Like, what about that What to Expect When Expecting is coming out as a movie now?
Yeah, now that they're making a movie. Yeah,
like based on a guidebook. Like,
based on a guidebook.
It's not that
interesting.
Like, they don't even care, dude. They'll make a movie out of anything.
Do you hear that Algebra 2 is coming out?
What?
Dude, the first one was
hilarious. Dude, the massive success of the Four Dummies series is going to be huge.
You know what I read the other day that there's actually a company... I forget what they're called, but basically all that they do is, like, they get someone with an idea, and then they get them or, like, team them with, you know, kind of like a ghostwriter or whatever, to just write their idea into a book, basically for the purpose of having it as intellectual property to use for, like, a movie or anything else, because they're just flat out admitting that books aren't that economical anymore. The only ones that really do well are, like, the giant mega series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Specifically for young adults.
Like, what about? I feel like we're missing so many target audiences. Like, what about moms? Moms love reading like
Twilight.
Yeah,
but
like,
still, just if you just look at book sales as numbers, they're not really moneymaker. I mean, Borders closed it, hundreds and hundreds of Borders stores, which was the only bookstore I ever went to all throughout high school.
That's true. I'm having a problem right now where I need to start reading again. And I don't know where to go.
You can go to Barnes and Noble.
I know there are libraries in my
Barnes and Noble, but there aren't as many convenient locations in the city.
Yes, exactly.
It's all going
online. I don't want to go to a library.
It's all going online. That's where it's all going.
I know where they are. I'm not going there, Lisa.
Get a Nook. Get a Nook or a Kindle.
You can get a lot of things in the library.
Yeah, the Nook. I love my Nook. It's, I mean, the only problem
with Amazon.com.
The thing is, I'm not going to read that often.
Go get it from Amazon.
You can read Nook on your phone.
It's like delivery.
Oh, that's gotta be a bad idea. Mm-hmm.
No, dude, that's why I read everything now.
On your phone?
Well, yeah, you can get the Nook app.
For me, it was huge because I can't see well. I couldn't really read like books, so I used to do all audiobooks, which was like good and bad. It was like good because you know it's a little bit easier to read audiobooks, but it was bad because if it was like a complicated book or one with any sort of like really dense language, it's very hard to like, because when you're reading, you don't realize, like, you'll like go back, reread a sentence, whatever, like make sure that you understand it.
Yeah.
When it's just cruising by at the same speed all the time and you're trying to read like a James Joyce book, good luck. It'll get messy.
It's like that even in print.
I know. And so, like, what I've been able to do now is go back and because I can now get like the Stanza app for the iPhone, can enlarge the font big enough that I can read it. I can actually go back and read all of these things that I couldn't read prior.
That's really cool.
And it totally changed like my ability to read.
Have you guys ever had the opposite effect where you watch a movie and that makes you
read the book? That's when I actually read a... Oh, what?
We watch a movie and it makes you want to read the book.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I read The Godfather that way. Read Vengeance, the story, the book that Munich is based off of. If I actually read a book, it's because I'm like, I want to know more about those characters.
Would you?
I
don't want to read Snowfall, the book.
Skyfall?
Shit. dude, Snowfall is great. Snowfall's the version with Ethan.
Have you read any of the James Bond books?
Yeah, I've read Goldfinger, On a Magic Secret. No, I've not read it. I want to read On a Magic Secret. They're dirty. Goldfinger has many parts that were not in the 1965 movie. Excuse you, LP.
James Bond Supremacy.
No, they're not the same universes. Thank you. No, I've read a couple of the James Bond books. Those are... No, fuck Ian Fleming. Hold up a second.
Okay,
here we go.
This is a part of the show where fuck you, Ian Fleming, by Nick Mikula.
Okay, like, he's an amazing writer. And you know, it's really interesting to read, like, these James Bond books that are written, like, in the 50s and 60s. Because you think about spy movies now, you're like, how is this going to be at all interesting? And, you know, in terms of, like, him doing, like, cool maneuvers and escaping bad guys. But you end up, you know, reading more about the character. And they're great books, except the fact that Ian Fleming loves to write about James Bond eating food.
Really?
And he will spend, like, 5 pages, I shit you not, about James Bond's breakfast.
Every breakfast
James Bond has.
Opportunity.
For, like, the most detailed, like, how brown or how well cooked the eggs are and how
toast.
Hot the toast.
He always has fucking
the toast.
Eggs, toast, coffee.
Coffee, orange
and
juice.
The eggs are they runny usually?
They're runny,
like,
and he'll go.
And do they have the beans?
It's like.
Sounds like breakfast.
English breakfast?
It sounds like totally like breakfast.
Wow. Sounds like Ian Fleming just.
All you end up doing is putting the book down and going to eat food. You don't end up finishing the chapter.
It's so important. Everything that James Bond, you know, smokes, drives, wears, it
eats.
All matters. It all matters.
Egg sales tripled.
It's insane.
I love the idea that James Bond becomes a spokesperson for eggs.
Yes.
Dude. James Bond made quiche. That was a big deal.
We have to issue protocol breakfast sandwich.
Brian, when you were talking about a book that was formative for you.
Yeah.
I was thinking of when I was really little.
Here we go.
Before, like when you get to high school, everybody reads To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. But when I was little, like, I don't know. Dad, someone showed me
Amelia Bedelia?
Oh, no.
What the fuck is Amelia Bedelia?
His most formative book.
No, I just thought Lauren was Amelia Bedelia.
I think she takes everything literally. But no.
I thought Lauren would like that humor. You didn't grow up with Amelia Bedelia?
I think I did.
I'm looking it up right now.
Who is your favorite?
Wait, what? She takes everything. She takes everything literally. She says,
draw the curtains. She will sit there and draw them by hand on a piece of paper.
Okay.
She will draw the curtains.
But she doesn't understand that words can mean different things. Or
she doesn't
get, like, the idioms.
She just doesn't get it at all.
But she's, like, unfailingly positive throughout it all.
She's left a note of tasks, and she does them all as the literal version of them.
No.
And it's wrong. And she's wrong. Then she gets fired. But the boss eats some food that she made, and it's so delicious. She gets rehired on the spot.
Can I explain?
Wait, hold on, I want to hear Lauren's
book. All right, good.
Let's not get away from this.
What was your favorite book?
Well, it was. I thought To Kill a Mockingbird. I was trying to understand, like, why people thought certain ways about other people and, like, racism, and it was a little bit ahead of my time when I was probably too old for me to really read, but that was one of the books that my parents were like, no, you should sit down and read this and, like, understand it. And we watched the movie, and, like, I talked about it with my parents, and, like, I don't know, I really, like, felt that made me learn a lot about, you know, how it was back in the day when there was all the racism going on in the South and what was going on there. And
That's a lot more serious.
Yeah, I know. But that was pretty formative for me because I was like, that was my big first introduction into, you know, the cruelty of people. And
you know, we had to read To Kill a Mockingbird
in school in Tennessee too, and I feel like a lot of those Tennessee people still haven't read it because they think the same way. If it had changed them, that they didn't read it.
One thing I loved about To Kill a Mockingbird is that, like, it's written from the perspective of one of the kids.
Scout, yeah.
And so, like, when you read it as a kid, you, kind of identify with it because it's from a perspective closer to you. But then when you read it as an adult, there's so much more in it that you just didn't know at the time.
I need to reread it. Well, and I think that's a good point you brought up about books before. We were talking about, like, what's the purpose of them? Like, what do they do? What's the use of reading? I think books like that, really great novels, just teach you about, like, how the world works. How do people work? How do people differ? And it teaches you things that, like, you can't necessarily learn any other way.
I think you could learn all the same lessons from watching this shit TV.
I don't think so.
TV and movies?
Because there's so much interpretation, and people interpret
these interpretation.
They function in different ways, and I think they affect people in different ways. Like, they activate different ways and avenues of thinking about things. Like, they might accomplish the same task.
Well, they ignite literal different parts of your brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The part of your brain that reads is a different part of your brain that sees movies and understands them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally going through a different system of mm-hmm. neurons to getting that feeling. So it does affect you differently because literally that's how your brain works. Your brain only uses part of it for reading and it spreads out that way. But I think in terms of how it would change you as a person, I guess it's probably actually for each his own purpose. Like, reading is probably very important to some people whose brains give the best length of memory and understanding to books, whereas some people might have better length and understanding through visual images, which is pretty much how some people learn. Some people learn visually, some people learn by reading it and writing it. So books may be wonderful for some people. They may be the exact opposite of the best teaching tool for others.
Yeah.
You know, so wise.
Well said.
Interesting little fact. I'm actually teaching a class now about the development of the brain and so this is going to be real. Oh my god, there's naked people on Gustavi's computer. Next
is it a really tall girl?
There's a really tall naked girl on the computer next to me.
She's not naked. She's
but basically, when babies are born, their brains are like have all these different neural connections, and over time, the neural connections get activated or not, and whichever ones don't get pared away and don't get grown, and whatever ones do get developed more and more and more. So it's really about how you educate kids when they're really young, like 1, 3, 4 years old, and that's going to like kind of gear them towards how they learn in the future.
So parenting matters.
Parenting freaking matters. Before kids can even speak or tell you that they know what's going on, it matters.
So that's kids that are dumb, it is officially their parents' fault.
I'd say 95 to 10%. Probably then.
What?
Wait.
Oh, okay. What? I can make that claim too confidently.
I'm making an autism movie. I cannot be bashing parents on international.
No, but when
you brought it up,
when pre-existing conditions are not a factor
on international.
Yeah, isn't our genes genetics part of it too?
Scientists are still killing themselves trying to figure it out.
Really?
Honestly, yeah, mm-hmm. They don't know. They're working on it. Lots of people.
It's probably a combo.
A combo is a general consensus.
Environment also. You know,
how much of it is meat? How much of it is cheese? Yeah, how much of it is the crispy shell? People don't really.
And how
know.
Much of it is that crispy shell's gangbanger friend?
Especially when it's Dorito flavored.
Are we making a combos joke?
We're making transverse different genres. Of
all right, food. I'm loving it, dude.
Put up that picture. I didn't get a good.
I put it on the. You didn't get a good view of this GIF of the tall.
She's so tall.
You know, I was into a tall girl once.
No, she's all that. She's like 7 foot.
7 foot.
Was she taller than you?
She was taller than me, and she played bass clarinet.
Yeah.
And had heels as well.
Oh my god.
So completely unnecessary. She was already like 6'3 at the time, so she was standing like 6'5.
She played volleyball.
She did play volleyball.
With them short shorts.
I don't know. I didn't see her play volleyball.
I like that ass.
I was dating somebody at the time, though.
It's good for me, man.
Good crush.
Yeah, she was a crush. When I was out on an honor band thing, I met her.
She didn't go to school?
No.
There's so many tall women out there.
Hey, Cloud.
I'm telling
you.
Totally
you were talking about reading. Do you have a formative book?
Yeah, I mean, like, a couple come to mind. The first one, a little sillier, is when I was like six. It's called I Like Me. And it's about a lady pig. And it's all about just how she likes herself. And she like falls while she's ice skating. But then she like picks herself back up. Oh. Or she like tries to make a cake and it fails. But then she tries and tries again. And it's a great cake. It's just such a good book.
What the fuck?
It's called
How Tall Is She? I got it. Okay. I found it. By Nancy Carlson?
Thank you. That's the cover.
Oh, wow.
It's very positive.
This looks good.
It's happy. One, I did love Great Gatsby and a lot of high school books, but the other one that came to mind was a book I read when I moved to the city after college. It's an Alan Watts book called The Book. And just kind of explains, like, how the world works. There's a theory on how the world works and, like, his idea of God. And it kind of goes along with, like, the, I don't know, the whole beatnik movement. And a lot of, it's like a, it's a Western way of explaining a lot of Eastern views. But I was like, oh, I really understand this. Wow. And it, like, all just clicked with me. And so since then I've had, like, a kind of different kind of understanding of the world and how people are.
Did you get it now?
I get it.
You get it? You get the world?
Yeah.
What's the secret?
What is it?
Is that, like, everyone's all just one thing. We're all connected.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Far out.
But why? But
why is? Why is, Cloud?
I know that we're connected. I get that. But why are we here?
You gotta read the book, Keith.
Dude, I'm reading the Wikipedia, and I
just tell me. You get it.
It says, I read it. It's as if, so, like, our existence is essentially all the creator, or what we call God. And everything that
life
we,
is God?
And yes. And you so everything me. That and so that everything we yes. look, see, touch, feel, and smell is a reflection of God.
It's like Spinoza so, had the same theory in his metaphysics.
And so, when I look at you, Keith, I'm looking into the eyes of God, but you are just the reflection of God that is Keith. So, so you're all of those parts of God that become you. So your energy, your feelings, your sentiment, you know, everything that I would encounter that's Keith, that's just that part of God. So, like, that would also explain, like, somebody that's maybe incredibly horrible or maniacal, yeah, yeah. even, in sorts, that you would...
So they're, like, a bad part of
what
God.
What about the universe?
It's all part of God.
That's part of it, too. We're
just yes. Yes. You should read
it. It's pretty cool.
And so
is there anything bigger than God?
Super God?
No, it's no, it is like all... It, small, it's just saying that it all is existing. The same... And so, although certain things are larger, certain things are smaller, they all are a reflection of God.
Interesting.
And connected.
Just like pieces of bark are all the tree.
And so,
and the twigs
at the end of the day, when you look
at those, just twigs and leaves.
Yeah, that's
it. No, that's not the tree. Those are those reject leaves.
And so, at the end of the day, when you look at something or someone that seems so different of than you, it kind of gives you that.
Oh, you can say, oh, that's just the shitty part of God. Man, fuck God. He's got some shitty parts. Good thing he's got me. I'm great God. I get it. Be well,
I'm the
thanks.
Great reflection part of God.
I like
it. That's, Keith, that's one
if
way
I,
you
if I tackle Keith, I'm tackling
yeah.
God's reflection.
The book discourages
myself,
that
really.
Sentiment.
We are all
positive.
The book is
and
a lot
Keith
more
positive.
That's right.
Keith
like
is inside
of
tears.
Us.
Keith is inside.
Keith died for our sins.
Has anybody recently read any sort of like sports advice books or things like that?
I read Nick's tennis tips.
It sucks.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You sure?
I wouldn't go to them.
Are you sure it sucks?
Is there,
yeah.
I don't know because I like books like that.
Have
I just
tried Brian's Badminton Bonanza.
I've tried that one. It's pretty good. But I'm looking for something a little
Scott
a little
Shuffleboard. Soliloquy.
No,
soliloquy.
I've read that one like three times.
Oh,
already.
I know. It's Cloud's Golf Tips.
Oh,
yay!
Do you guys have a copy of
Cloud's
Golf Tips?
Oh, run.
A good golf trip is like a brand new book. You get it a little reluctantly, and you might not want to jump in at first. But once you're out there, smelling the smells and thinking the thoughts, it's a good game.
This has been Clown's Golf Tips.
Why are you so reluctant to play golf? It seems like a leisurely activity.
Maybe it's like crappy weather. It's early. It's always early.
It's always
early. It is always 5 in the morning.
You can keep the $60.
Well, it's tough to get a good tee time. You got to be like a member.
Ready to play.
They should have cosmic golf, like cosmic bowling, where like the golf course turns like neon.
They do have the glow balls.
I've been to
mini golf. That's like that.
Indoor mini golf, where it's all glow in the dark.
Yeah.
I think it's called cosmic golf.
It's in like Shanghai.
I'm with Adam though. I want a full size golf course,
like the secret level Mario Kart type.
Oh yeah,
that's that would be cool.
I did that with Indian guides. It was awesome.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, we had glow balls, and they also, like, put, like, little glow things throughout the course. It was sweet.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. RJ says there's a mini golf place under a funeral home.
Yeah.
Yes, there is.
Under?
Yeah,
oh, God.
Palatine?
I've been there. It's awful.
Is it spooky themed?
Yes.
I don't know. Is it spooky themed?
It's
RJ.
The Congo River.
It's very small.
It's Congo River.
You gotta love a funeral home with a sense of humor.
You know Congo River, Scott?
Oh, yeah. I stole golf clubs from Congo River.
You would.
And apparently, yes, it is spooky themed.
Great.
That's a good call.
You know, folks, we are approaching the end of the podcast.
I can get there. All right, hold on.
Yeah, I'll stall a little bit.
No,
but,
go ahead.
But as always, this episode drops on both Octavarius.com and on iTunes every Friday. So if you're listening to this the day it comes out, that means it's Friday, May 25th, and we have some very special birthdays to announce. So first of all, happy birthday, Frank Oz.
Hey.
You're going to have to go for a little while.
Your birthday it is.
Happy birthday, Mike Myers, Canadian actor and comedian.
Aww. Happy birthday, Ian McKellen. Sir Ian McKellen, immortalized as Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. You're turning 72.
Happy birthday, Dimitri Martin. You are 39 today. No, I'm 39.
39? Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Way
older than I thought it was.
Happy birthday, Anne Heche, 82. 42, sorry. Y'all had to think for a second.
That's a very funny mistake to make.
She was like abducted by aliens.
She thought she was really cool.
She might have been. You don't know her.
You're right, I don't.
You don't even know if she's 82 or 42.
She had a relationship with Steve Martin. Did you know that?
No.
Happy birthday, Miguel Tejada, Dominican baseball player.
Yes.
Truth is out there. Who said that?
I said that.
No. Is there anything I should feel sad about?
Well, unfortunately, there is. Do you have one, Castelvi?
Sure. I'm sorry. Apologies and condolences to the family of Ralph W. Emerson, who died in 1803.
Ralph W. Emerson.
On the Books podcast.
Born in 1803.
Would Matt Tinsel make that same mistake?
No,
find out next week.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's his birthday.
He's
it's
like
not
the
his
most
death
quoted
day.
Man.
In history?
No, I think that's Zoolander.
So that's just his birthday? So
yes, it's just his birthday.
Well, in that case,
it's not his death day.
To the family.
Happy birthday, Emerson.
Emerson.
Well, sorry for your loss.
Happy birthday.
Oh, no, he died?
Well, he's dead for some time.
Oh.
Since 1883, apparently.
Lo siento on the day.
But he was born on that day.
Oh, but yeah, so happy.
But he's dead.
To the family and friends of composer Gustav Holst, I'm very sorry for your loss.
That's good. I love Holst.
Yeah, I love the Planet Suite. Is awesome.
Composer, conductor from Money Pit.
Gustav Holst. He died in 1934.
Never mind.
Self-reliance, Emerson, man.
Exciting music.
Emerson.
Oh my!
Schubert's that did the Money Pit.
Look at the clock, everybody. It's almost time to go.
But.
But.
I'm two dumbs.
I need help words.
Well, if you need help words, Keith, we have just enough time for Nick McCool's Seven Words of Wisdom.
The Book of Amun-Ra. Nahachalap!
What? This has been Nick McCool's Seven Words of Wisdom.
You mustn't read from the book!
You can't say that. I mean, I can't say that. You can say that.
That would have been seven words!
Are you serious?
Yes, count on your fingers. It's
you
seven.
Must not read from the book.
Wow, that would have worked great.
Can we start over? These are our podcasts.
No, we cannot.
We're done.
I would have done it. You
happy
were overruled.
Birthday, Sergeant Slaughter.
All right, and on that note, we are going to leave you folks. One more time, Adam Dick, thank you for, so much
thanks
for being on
you,
the podcast.
Adam.
Thank you, Boop.
It's great having you.
Yeah, Boop Uthor.
We learned a lot.
Nightlightsmovie.com, folks. Nightlightsmovie.com.
Nightlightsmovie.com.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
And
you're
with,
welcome. It was fun and terrifying.
Yeah, we got to see all those tall women that you
guys
know. The whole podcast, Kelly was just flashing him photos and gifs of tall women.
That's he wasn't good. As frightened as Aubrey was about birds.
Back to therapy.
Got to prepare yourself. That's just apparently what we do with our guests now.
That's torture them. It's a trick.
Seasons. And traumatized, as always.
All right, folks, that is going to do it for us. Until next time, have 8 days and a wicked week.
Bye.
Bye.
So run for your life. You're running out of time. Close and lock the door.
He's coming back for more.